0141 951 1025. It's time to talk football. It's Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Good evening and welcome to Clyde One Super Scoreboard as we look back on another interesting weekend in Scottish football. No Sunday game to reflect on, with the SPFL investigating the Dundee v Rangers postponement. It means Celtic are top after beating St Johnstone, with big wins for Kilmarnock, Aberdeen, Hibs and Ross County. And head of referees Crawford Allen announces his departure from the role. I'm Gordon Duncan, and joining me tonight you have Motherwell's Andy Halliday and Roger Hannah.
A 2 week international break, Gordon, a time for rest, recuperation and recovery. I'm still recovering from Kilmarnock 5, St Mirren 2 at the weekend. I know you boys are still recovering from Motherwell against Aberdeen and Willie Collum and Stephen McLean and VAR and handball. Celtic fans, they are recovering from 3 goals in 8 and another 3 disallowed by those horrible offside lines at Celtic Park. And Rangers fans are recovering from getting up on a Sunday morning, going all the way to Dens and having a look at a puddle.
Celtic reached the summit of the table with 8 games to go. There was a postponement yesterday, which is very, very unlike a March fixture. Like you said, big wins as well for Hibs, Kilmarnock, Aberdeen and Ross County. And now it's the time for the country to unite again, because we've got 2 Scotland games to look forward to.
Yeah, I'm sure everyone will be uniting in glorious harmony this evening. On 01419511025, that is the number you need. So come on down and get in touch. I think this probably is one of the only places in the footballing world where we'll have a proper barney about a wet pitch and a game postponed. But that's how we do things here. So if you have any thoughts on the postponement yesterday, please do share them. What about the footballing side of things? Because I know you've all got your theories. I've seen it there on social media. Does that suit Rangers or does it not? Because ultimately there was potentially a tiredness. It was coming off the back of Europe. If the game had been on, the pitch would have been heavy. So if you take that logic, it does suit Rangers. However, it might now be rescheduled for around the time of a certain meeting with Celtic. So maybe it doesn't. I don't know. You decide. You're the ones with the theories. We'll just try and pick our way through them. So what about the footballing impact of yesterday, once we've all argued about grass and referees and who should turn up when and make what decision when? 01419511025. Get your calls in. Celtic fans, more of a straightforward footballing weekend for you. Starting to feel a bit better about things again. How did you view that performance? Kyogo maybe getting back towards his best. Nicholas Kuhn improving. James Forrest scoring. Cameron Carter-Vickers back. How do you feel heading into the international break, top of the table, albeit having played a game more? Same number to you. Andy Halliday needs no invitation, Motherwell fans, to have a wee moan about handballs given and not given at Fir Park at the weekend. So if you fancy it, now is the time. And please tell me we're going to get 2 sides of it. Kilmarnock fans and St Mirren fans looking back on arguably the most outrageous game of the season so far. So 01419511025. Give us a call right now and these two will whet your appetite. Result of the weekend, go.
Well, I was there. It has to be Kilmarnock 5, St Mirren 2. I don't really think I've ever seen a game like they talk about a game of 2 halves. St Mirren, total control, 2-0 up, deserved to be 2-0 up, could have been further ahead. 61 minutes on the clock before Kilmarnock trouble the scorer, and then they hit 5 goals in 18 minutes. Quite remarkable.
I'm going to go Ross County. They've got a dismal record against Hearts up in Dingwall over the last decade or so. I don't think many would have predicted them to get a result, never mind a win at the weekend. It gets them 10 points adrift for Livingston at the foot of the table, and only 1 point behind St Johnstone. So my result of the weekend.
Goal of the weekend, who's getting the nod?
Well, I have to go back to Rugby Park. They saved the best to last. Young David Watson, who was playing this sort of unusual sort of right back role, but Derek McInnes at the weekend when Lewis Mayo was out the team. Swashbuckling run past a lot of weary St Mirren challenges. A nice finish past Zach Hemming, and he even got a comparison with Cafu from his captain,
right?
Kyle Vassell.
Okay, I wonder if that's one of those goals that can be goal of the weekend and howler of the weekend at the same time.
I was thinking that.
If you're a St Mirren fan, you might not be so complimentary about the defensive effort.
You know what I like, Gordon?
Team goals.
You know what I like? I'm going over Easter Road. I could pick any of the 3 goals, to be honest. I thought they were all very, very good, high quality, but I'm going to go for my leader. Great combination play, really good passing, moving tight areas. It ends with a lovely cutback for Ellie Ewan back to my leader. a tap in, but more for the team build within the goal.
He's a purist, this guy. Okay, let's get more interesting. Howler of the weekend.
Oh, I've got to start, Roger. I've got to go first.
Don't you may get a notice of complaint here.
Well, don't imply bias or incompetence now. I'll say the officials as a whole at Fir Park then. I'm not even sure who was on VAR. I think it might have been Stephen McLean.
Right, okay.
And you know what? I'll rebrand it and I'll just say the handball rule in general. Because, I mean, we've got to feel very, very hard done by. I could be here for way longer than I'm supposed to describing how I feel about the incident. But, yeah. We feel as if we've scored a perfectly good goal. Don't see any complaints from Aberdeen, their players, their staff or their fans. Next thing you know, it's flagged up from what, in my opinion, was a very, very dubious call.
Okay. Don't get him started, Roger.
I'll have him cranked up into an outburst. He's going to get a notice of complaint long before 8 o'clock tonight, Gordon.
And yours?
The Howler. Well, that has to be Dens Park, doesn't it? Dundee were there. Rangers were there. Sky Sports were there. The Scottish Sun. Super Scoreboard. They were all there at Dens Park. And the game was called off. Fourth postponement this season. It doesn't reflect well that there's, I think Philip Clement said, the only senior game in Great Britain called off at the weekend. Dundee need to invest a bit in the pitch.
And top performer, top man, main man of the weekend was...
Roger was there, and I'm going to go Derek McInnes' team talk at half time. St Mirren, by all accounts, looked very, very comfortable in the first half, dominated proceedings. And then to score 5 goals in 18 second half minutes... just feels to me as if that resounding team talk that Derek McInnes gave at half time must have had some effect, because you could see every time Kilmarnock went forward, they looked like scoring. And, you know, St Mirren are a sort of well balanced team defensively, not conceded a lot of goals this season and conceded 5 goals in such a short space of time. I mean, it's Derek McInnes had a lot of plaudits this year, undeservedly so.
I'll go Simon Murray for Ross County. Those 2 goals against Hearts, as Andy said, terrible record against Hearts, probably the most unlikely result of the weekend. And it's taken County 10 points clear of Livingston. There is no way back for Livingston now. And County have given themselves a right good chance of actually avoiding the relegation playoff place as well.
Come on then, 01419511025. Another busy weekend in Scottish football. And the whole point of a Monday night on here is to find out what you made of it. And we've got news today as well, that Crawford Allen story announcing his departure from the Scottish FA head of referees. I don't know if Andy Halliday or Roger Hanna are putting an application in, but we'll find out before the
There's
end
only
of
one
the show.
Man for that job. A Mr. H. Keevans of Mulgarry.
I think so.
Oh, yes.
Can you imagine?
He's
already fairly unpopular.
Ian Maxwell in the SFA said they'd already started the search for a new head of referees. And they wanted an experienced candidate.
He's experienced.
He's too biased towards Clyde Bank. Can it happen?
That's true. That is very true. Anyway, right, let's go to John, who's first through. How are you, John?
I'm fine, and yourselves?
Not bad. What are you thinking tonight?
I think it's been the third or the fourth time now that a game has been postponed at Dundee. I think one or two times is a mistake and beyond your control. Gets to 3 or 4 times, it starts to become behavioural. I really do think it's getting beyond a joke now with some of the state of some of the pitches in Scotland. We need to bring in some tighter legislations. I think if it happens again, Dundee should be deducted the points and forfeit the match.
Well, what do you make of this, Roger? Because as we said, we're probably... this is right up our street, if you like. You know, we'll have a proper debate about this in terms of this should happen and that should happen. On one hand, sometimes it rains and pitches get wet and there's nothing you can do about it. And then on the other, as John says, there has to be questions asked about, is it happening too often? What can you do? And then how does the postponement come about? So pick your way through it.
Well, listen, if yesterday's postponement had come in isolation, a lot of rain fell, it was an early kick-off, they didn't have time to get the rain water off the pitch, and it hadn't happened before, then I would have no problem with it at all, Gordon. These things happen, as you say. It's Scotland, it tends to rain. But this is the fourth time this season that the Dens pitch hasn't been fit for a game of football. Now, we're not talking the Tayside and District Amateur League. This is the Scottish Professional Football League, the Premiership, the top flight in Scotland. This was a game that was getting beamed around the nation and around the world yesterday. And in the middle of March, I don't think it's good enough that for the fourth time this season, Dundee's pitch is unplayable. And it was unplayable. You know, there's no argument over the postponement. The postponement was a correct decision by Don Robertson and by the local ref who was going to make it earlier on in the day. Made the right decision, so let's get that sorted straight away. But I don't think there'll be a points deduction yet, John. but it wouldn't surprise me if there's some variety of censure from the SPFL to say to Dundee, come on now, enough's enough.
Because I wonder how it does work, Andy. I get John's frustration, I get everybody's frustration. Let's go extreme hypothetical. Let's say in 2 or 3 weeks' time we get the worst rainfall you've ever seen and the game's off. Mm-hmm. And you say, well, there you are, points deduction. At which point Dundee say, well, there's nothing we could do. It just feels like that's a way off, albeit people are right to be frustrated.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, I don't live in Tessie, I don't live in Dundee, but I was even shocked when I seen there was a pitch inspection. I didn't expect the heavy downpour that they had. But listen, like you said, 4 postponements in the one season at home. I'm going to defend Dundee a little because I do think they realise they've got a poor drainage system at Dens Park. I think they're trying to move away from the stadium. They're trying to get more infrastructure put into their pitch. But listen, you ask professionals and players, you know, a lot of people, Dens Park's never been their favourite to go and play football because it's quite renowned for being a heavy pitch, especially at this time of year. But yeah, 4 postponements in the one season certainly doesn't look good.
I wonder, John, you know, punishing serial offenders, or I think you did use the word legislation, is there a way that, you know, clubs are required to spend X amount on a pitch, and then whether that comes from some sort of central fund like it does in other countries, do you think that should become a priority?
I think we need to do something similar to the English league. There needs to be higher standards and practices to make sure fans aren't wasting their money trying to get all the way up there. It's not just the points of the matter, it's the fans as well that are getting punished via these bad pitches.
Yeah, I think the problem when you compare anything that's driven by money to England, Roger, it's just a non-starter.
The point I was going to make was that there is something in the rules about adequate pitch protection, which involves basically decent undersoil heating or some comparable system so that games aren't frozen off in the depths of winter.
Yeah.
You need that in the top flight. But surely adequate pitch protection should also cover drainage so that the water drains away and you're able to play football on the surface as well.
I've had some examples. I remember, obviously, Fir Park was terrible back in the day.
Gordon,
invested
a lot
of money.
How did Motherwell sort that?
Money.
They spent money on the pitch.
Yeah,
I think even the game is a spectacle if you're watching it on Sky. The pitch to the naked eye, listen, I wasn't pitch side, so I can't see it up close, but you've seen the pictures. I mean, it looks as if there's just 4 big gaping holes in the middle of the pitch covered in sand and sawdust. Listen, it doesn't look great, and I definitely think you know, for the benefit of Scottish football, Dundee will be looking to invest a little bit on that picture.
Yeah, I mean, Ryan Clark has sent me a picture and it's got Rory McIlroy hitting some bunker shots out the sort of sand that was in the middle of the pitch.
Don't tell the dads, or that will be travelling up just now.
Listen, he was in St Andrews at the weekend for his birthday.
There you go.
He could have popped by and he's way down. But
people
anyway,
will see
practice his shot.
Dazzler was in St Andrews Saturday night. Rangers were in St Andrews Saturday night. Game off Sunday morning.
Anyway, it's been quite a few days for photoshopped images on social media sites, so we'll maybe leave it there. Let's hear Philippe Clement's take on it. He was discussing, like everything else, when there's no game on, there's only one thing to discuss at the pitch.
We were not warned about it, so not yesterday evening, not during the night. I hear people already started to work 5 o'clock in the morning here, so they did in that way their best. This morning also not, so our kitman was early here. And he warned us about the situation, so that's already a really strange thing for me. Probably this will be the only pitch in all the leagues in Scotland where a game will be postponed. So that doesn't have anything to do then with the weather. Yes, it rained, yes, but it's rained all over Scotland. And at pitches and in other lower leagues, they can play football. There the ball is bouncing, but here the ball is not bouncing. So clearly there's something wrong. It's a very important thing for the future that the league thinks about how to raise the level of the pitches and to put standards on that.
Let's bring in Gareth and see how he feels. Gareth?
Good evening, panel. You okay?
Hi, Gareth.
I was just want to talk about Dundee Rangers game being postponed. I think the game should have went ahead. We heard the MD of Dundee, on television saying that the game would have been played if they had more time to get, obviously, them spots that was really bad sorted. Obviously, Sky TV rights and stuff like that, but why did the SPFL or the SFA not just give them more time and that game would have been on yesterday?
I think I wonder about that, Roger, because John Nelms did, and There are a few subplots here as well. I don't think Dundee and Rangers get on famously well. Would that be fair?
Yeah.
You know, there was like email gate and all that sort of stuff. Let's not open old wounds.
Please don't.
Spam folders and all the rest of it. You've also got generally, you know, I know certain clubs maybe don't love every element of Scottish football's governing body. So there's a kind of lot going on there. Can you just go and play a game at 3 o'clock and it was scheduled for 12? Does anybody know if it actually would have been playable by then? I sometimes wonder if we make these things out to be more simple than they are.
Yeah, and listen, I know John Nelms said that. I'm a bit sceptical about the whole thing. Don Robertson was there. Don Robertson looked at the pitch. We've seen video footage of the pitch. We've seen photographs of the pitch. That area that Andy referred to in the middle of the park, I mean, I think Philip Clement described it as unsafe. So it might have dried out a little bit in the intervening 3 hours, but clearly not to the satisfaction of the referee, whose overriding consideration has to be player safety. Also, the game's 12 o'clock. Now, it's the good people of Sky Sports might have been agreeable to move it back. We don't know. They weren't asked. It didn't get that far. But think of the supporters. You know, there'll be Rangers supporters going all over the country home. They might have bookings on boats. You know, it's not just as simple as saying, right, boys, you know, make yourself scarce around Dundee for 3 hours. We'll have a go at this at 3 o'clock. That's not how it works.
Then there's every chance, and I don't know, that Rangers or Dundee after say, what type of preparation was that for the players?
Yeah.
You know, and then actually we end up complaining that players have been there all day and have to go and play a game.
Give us
the professional side of it.
I'm also thinking the worst. What if you do give it an extra couple of hours to give it the best chance and the game still doesn't go ahead? How does that reflect on Scottish football and how does that look? I think Dundee and their ground staff did everything they possibly can to deem the pitch playable. I think Don Robertson's came, had a look at the pitch. I actually seen the footage that Roger's talking about for the 9:15 pitch inspection. I was talking to friends and family at the time and I says, this game's not on. As soon as you seen that ball hit off that mud patch and not bounce, you just knew, even at you're giving it an extra hour and 15 minutes for the next inspection, you just knew straight away it wasn't going to be on.
Gareth, give me a football-related theory here. As a Rangers fan, on a footballing basis, did it suit Rangers for the game to be off or not?
Not really, no, because we play Hibs on the Saturday, they go to Livingston, so they're going to have a week off before basically playing us on the 7th of April, if it is played on the 3rd or 4th of April, so they're going to have more time than us. So is that advantage to Celtic then?
Or, Roger, Rangers would have been leggy and tired and whatever after Europe at the weekend. They're down to the bare bones squad-wise. Theories are out there. Which one do you subscribe to?
I was really surprised how vocal Philip Clement was, because I actually wondered yesterday if he might be secretly quite content that the game was off. Look at the injuries Rangers have got, you know. By the time the game's played, and you haven't got a date for it yet, it'll be some date early April, you would think, either side of the Old Firm game, you would imagine, or perhaps even beyond the Ross County game before the Cup semi-final against Hearts. Whenever that game is, you would think Dujon Sterling, Ross McCausland, guys like that, have a better chance of being back fit. There might be others back fit as well. It gives the likes of Kamar Roof and Robbie Matondo, Todd Cantwell, who are just coming back, it gives them a little bit more time to get up to speed. And I thought the Benfica game last Thursday, tea time, and even the Hibs game the previous Sunday at Easter Road, before Hibs imploded with the two red cards, on both occasions, I thought Rangers looked a wee bit leggy. I thought, you know, the fact that they've had so many injuries and the same guys have had to go to the well time and time again, I thought it looked as if it was catching up with them. So I didn't think the postponement yesterday was dreadful for Rangers. I thought if anyone was going to be annoyed about it, it would be Tony Docherty, because Dundee had just beaten Aberdeen at Dens in the midweek. They did an extra 24 hours on Rangers to prepare for the game. They quite fancied it. So I didn't think it was terrible for Rangers. The game was off.
Get Andy Halliday's thoughts in a second, but what do you think? Was it a blessing in disguise or not? Give us a call. We will get you on next.
You are the voice of Scottish football. Call 0141 951 1025. Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Andy Halliday and Roger Hanna are here. 0141 951 1025 is the number that Gary in East Kilbride has dialed. How are you, Gary?
Hi, Gordon, how are you doing? Looking to talk about the whole postponement yesterday. On your last sort of point there, you were asking, does it suit Rangers or doesn't it suit Rangers? I think it depends on where the game falls. Because if it falls the week leading up to the Celtic game, then most fans would say no, it doesn't. But if it falls, it just depends where it falls. But following the last 2 weeks, the last couple of weeks, the Rangers players have looked leggy and the injuries are starting to take a bit of a toll. So I think it probably does suit us, even though a lot of fans are annoyed because obviously it now means going into the international break, Celtic are 1 point ahead. But at the end of the day, it probably does suit us.
Andy, what would your take be then, right? What would you rather? Would you rather have played yesterday with all those circumstances taken into account, Europe, injuries, legginess and heavy pitch, and have a free week leading up to a game with Celtic, or play the midweek leading up to a game with Celtic?
I'd rather the game was played yesterday, yeah. Rather, assuming Rangers win, I'd rather the points on the board. But I can absolutely see the pros and cons that people are talking about, because I was quite vocal about it. I thought over both legs against Benfica, I thought Rangers looked quite leggy, specifically the last 20 minutes over there in Lisbon, and then the home game at Ibrox. I just thought when Benfica scored, you're expecting this sort of onslaught for Rangers in the last 15-20 minutes to push and try and get back into the tie. I just felt they looked a bit flat and they couldn't really get themselves going. So then going into the game at Dens Park, you felt, almost like we said, to be honest, going into Easter Road, you felt this is a real opportunity for Dundee to get points off of Rangers. Obviously their injury situation, well, as we know, Philippe Clement likes to rotate his squad. You don't really feel as if in certain areas he can do that at the minute. And then, like you said, we're a couple of weeks down the line with a rescheduled game. You like to think they can get 2-3 bodies back. But if it falls 3-4 days before an Old Firm game, I do think that is a slight advantage to Celtic.
We tend to look at these things, as Gordon says, through an Old Firm prism. This is a big game for Dundee as well.
Exactly. I mean, totally fall now, into that trap all
Dundee
the time, don't we?
Still have a very good opportunity to finish in the top six. And Dundee will probably have a preferred date for playing this game of football. You wonder if it suits Dundee to delay it for as long as they can, so that they can maybe have a look and think, well, if we can get it, you know, to beyond match day 33, the midweek before the Scottish Cup semi-finals, then we would know by that stage what we might need to do to get into the top six.
And inevitably what we'll do is we'll then come back and dissect this and argue over it when the date's picked. Look, it has to go somewhere. Can we all like acknowledge that now? We're kind of running out of time, running out of free midweeks. The obvious one is the midweek before Rangers play Celtic. Again, do we even know for sure if the rearranged game would be on TV? I can't remember how that works exactly.
Well, listen, you know better than me. It all fits into Sky's schedule. Because Sky will have a say, because
the midweek after the Celtic game is a Champions League midweek as well, isn't it?
But Champions League midweek, no, that's not on the Sky Sports schedule. That's on other companies' schedules. Yeah,
in Scotland, we don't tend to put games up against.
I think that's been sort of relaxed in the last couple of seasons, hasn't it?
Well, I think the big leagues sometimes do it because they flex their muscles and say, whatever. I don't recall Scotland doing too many televised games up against Champions League.
Because too much is the Champions League anyway.
Well, there is that side of it.
Is there anything that says that week that, you know, you could take a game beyond week 33? It could be played in the midweek prior to the Scottish Cup semi.
That just seems even more problematic, doesn't it?
I don't know.
So, Gary, you sort of said, you know, some people would say, and you know, it all just depends where the fixture falls. Let's say it is to be that midweek before the Celtic game. What would your preference have been? Play yesterday or play that midweek?
Again, as Andy said, if you knew what the outcome was going to be, you know you're going to get the win, you're saying, play yesterday. But I think going into it, you've got to think they've still got enough in the tank to get past Andy, even with the good run of form they're on. We've come up against form teams and won. We've come up against teams that weren't in form and lost. So I would definitely say I would have preferred it to be played yesterday. And then you go into the 2 week break, still top, you get the break then for the legs. But all it does is give them an extra couple of days, doesn't it?
So, I mean, how many times have we seen in Rangers themselves, we've seen it with Rangers specifically, so you don't even need to look too far. Sometimes playing midweek, you get a good result, your confidence boosted, you know, you're busy, you're ticking along. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that benefits teams. We sometimes default to, it will definitely be a disadvantage to Rangers if they play the midweek before the Celtic game. But it's not always that simple, is it?
Well, some of Rangers' best results over the last few years has come in European ties, when you felt going into it, they were you know, they had a lack of sort of training preparation, can you say? But listen, I agreed with Hugh when Hugh talked about it last week. I thought it was Hibs's best chance going into the game. I thought it was Hibs's best chance going into the game against Rangers at Easter Road last weekend, because I thought Rangers looked leggy for Benfica. The travel, obviously, going to the Scottish Cup quarter final at Easter Road that weekend. And that wasn't the case. It ended up quite a comfortable victory for Rangers after the red cards that Hibs got. So listen, you don't know. I'm still, as I'm looking at through a player's lenses, I would want the game played, I'd want the points in the bag and then move on. But listen, it was unfortunately it was out of the control of both clubs.
Do you think Philip Clement was so annoyed because if he'd known earlier he could just have nipped round for breakfast at Gordon Dale's caravan?
There's every chance.
They should have just hopped the fence at Tannadice and played their enemy. It's right across the road.
Well listen, I was there for Super Scoreboard week past Saturday. Place was like a bowling green.
But then they've not got the drainage a dense part though.
It's further up the hill as well, isn't it? You think the water would run? But this is where we don't know enough about football. Never mind drainage and pitches. And
you'll be out in Sandyman Street with a spirit level next.
Honestly, let's hear a bit more from Philippe Clement in terms of the negative impact of that postponement.
Only negative, because we were ready for this game. We have very important weeks to come to play these final games against top six. It's going to be difficult to put this game in between, and it's a disadvantage if you have a midweek game and the other team have 1 week of preparation. So normally I find always something positive in every situation, but today I cannot say anything positive.
Craig is on the line. What's your take on it, Craig?
Hi guys, first time caller, absolutely love the show.
Thanks, Craig. Great to have you.
Okay.
My take is probably going to be a bit mental, and I think you're going
to... this is a great start to your first call, Craig. Go on.
You put a disclaimer on it nice and early, Gordon. That's how it goes. I think Rangers should be given the 3 points.
Certainly bold, Craig. You're going to need to back that up. Come on, then.
Well, I mean, there can't be many clubs in the recent times that have had so many games called off due to their pitch not being playable or whatever. Especially when there's Sunday league games going on every week and they're getting their pitches on. I know it's a different level and there's probably a lower threshold, I suppose, but I don't know. I've not really got much to back it up with that. I just feel that there should be an actual hit to the club. I know they can be fined in terms of monetary or whatever, but I just feel that 3 points should be given Rangers way after that. I don't know how you feel about it.
Where's the cut-off then, though? The postponement before, does that team not get the 3 points, but when it's the next one, Rangers do?
Well, maybe it shouldn't have got to the stage of Rangers. Maybe it should have happened on the last one. But I'm making the call at this point as a Rangers fan, because I've obviously got allegiances that way. If I was whatever other fan in the last game, I might be making the same point. Obviously, nobody's probably made it to now, but... That's my view on it. I don't know how you guys.
Roger, is it the fourth? Right, because I just keep seeing conflicting.
I thought it was the third.
I've got an article in front.
I thought it was four.
Do you know what? And lots of people. Roger?
I thought it was Aberdeen, St Johnstone, Ross County, and Rangers.
Right. Okay. So this one I've got in front just says Aberdeen, St Johnstone, Rangers.
Can I tell you something?
I'll look it up.
I believe Roger Hanna over online.
I would agree with that as well. There does seem to be a feeling out there as well. Anyway, but listen, you get the point. What's the...
Craig, we love your first time call, but you described it as mental, and I'm going to back that claim up. I do think it's a bit mental. We giving Rangers the 3 points for it. I can understand the frustration, absolutely. It all looked a wee bit messy yesterday. You know, you're calling off a game that's live on Sky 90 minutes before kickoff, and it's not great for either club. But as Gordon said, he kind of stole my point that I was going to say. What you're doing with the other three games to the other three teams that got games postponed at Dens Park, it's unfortunate. It's not great timing, especially with the games that's coming thick and fast before the split. But no, I certainly don't think points should be handed to any club.
I also wonder, Roger, if we've got an issue in Scottish football, we'll find it and we'll complain about it. But we also expect at times for it to be a quick fix. Let's say as an example that, you know, things are put in place that you need to invest X amount in your pitch, yeah, and it needs to get to a certain standard. That won't happen overnight. We have to be open to the possibility Dundee might have another postponement in the next couple of weeks, because
Storm Babette might come back. Remember Storm Babette?
Whatever that is. Yeah. On a serious note, they're not going to be able to fix this right now. Anyway, even if they did, even if they went and took a big loan out, you know, fix it instantly. Do you see what I mean?
I do see what you mean. Yeah.
Like, what does happen genuinely if there's another postponement at Dens within the next couple of weeks?
Well, probably nothing will happen, to be perfectly honest with you.
Lots of phone calls on here.
I just, you know, how long do you let these kind of things go? Midwinter, I don't think there was any real complaints when some of those other games, you know, St Johnstone and Aberdeen and the like, were called off, however late they were called off. But when you're the only club in the UK senior leagues in eight divisions of football who are unable to get a game on in the middle of March, off the back of being unable to get three previous top flight games on, then I think the SPFL, they got a lot of stick in this show, Gordon. I think they're right to investigate the circumstances surrounding yesterday's postponement and also what's going on with the Dundee pitch. You're not going to take points off Dundee. That is mental.
What does the investigation look like then? You know, what is that? What does it achieve? What does it uncover?
The investigation looks like, what did Dundee do to try and get the game on? Were they aware that it might rain? Did they have enough ground staff? I believe there's been a change in staff up there during the course of the season at Dens. Who's working in the pitch? When were they working in the pitch? When was the local referee called to the scene? When was Don Robertson called to the scene? Were Rangers kept in the loop over all of this? Could the game have been delayed? I'm not a fan of that kind of thing. I think the correct decision was taken by Don Robertson, I have to say, Gordon. But I think they'll look at all of that. And they'll also ask, what was learned from the previous three postponements? You know, what did Dundee do to improve the drainage system, to improve the pitch, the surface? Andy says it's a heavy surface, always has been. What are Dundee doing to best make sure games of football can take place on that pitch?
Do you remember, in fact, would you have been involved? Remember Rangers Livingston at Ibrox got postponed and they pushed it back a day?
24 hours, yeah. I was involved, I remember it.
What was that like?
Not great. You actually, you know, you want the game played, but when you hear it's off, you're like, you know what, I've got a nice dinner booked tonight, I, you know, look forward to a wee weekend off. And then you find out the game's 24 hours later, it's porridge at 12 o'clock all over again. No, I remember it. What was the score, can you remember?
That I can't.
One of the reasons I'm against points deductions as well, look at the game that was postponed at Ibrox early in the season. Remember Ross County left Dingwall to come down the road, got as far as Inverness and get stuck in the snow and the road was closed. You know,
it wouldn't be the same though, would it?
But any of these sort of things, I'm not a huge fan of, you know, oh yes, they'll forfeit the points and give them to the other team.
Listen, you're a lot more knowledgeable than me when it comes to these situations. But what's the protocol with a local referee at 9:15? What control does he have when he has a look at pitch in his cell and he probably deems it almost unplayable at 9:15? Is it just a case of letting the match official come an hour later, see if it improves?
Yeah, I think that's standard, isn't it, Roger, for a local ref? I think that's the way I can always remember it being goes first. I don't know if he deemed it playable, though. I don't think he deemed it unplayable, did he? It was almost like, well, let Don Robertson comes in as the final say.
The local referee who wasn't getting paid Don Robertson's money and saw the Sky cameras and saw Philippe Clement and saw Tony Docherty and saw John Nelms thought, there's no way I'm postponing this, get Don Robertson over here.
Genuinely, and again, it's a judgment call at that point whether we think it's, you know, unlikely or not. Thought maybe it would have cleared up in an hour. Again, I get that.
I'm just going off. I'm seeing the local referee on the pitch. I'm seeing him bounce the ball in certain areas of the pitch. And my initial instinct straight away was, I don't think this game's going to go ahead. I then just think, why is it waiting to an hour later? Obviously, you do need Don Robertson to come and have a look at it yourself, but could it have been done earlier?
It's the perfect storm, pardon the pun, because all these things do become more difficult with a 12 o'clock kickoff.
Can you delay it? Can you play it later? Or should you have postponed it earlier?
You know, if that's a 3 o'clock game, naturally you've got more awake time for everybody to get their head around it. Craig finishes off with the football argument. Is it a blessing in disguise for Rangers or not?
In terms of the football element, it's probably a bit of a blessing. I think Rangers would have went and won the game yesterday anyway, but it's going to be good to get probably, well, what are we talking, a couple of weeks before we play again, and probably getting, hopefully, 1-2 back after the kind of hectic schedule we've had. So I guess it is a blessing in disguise, but I thought we would have won the game yesterday anyway.
I think it's a fair assessment. I think Rangers are going to go into it as favourites, although Dundee, they'll be buoyant for the midweek win against Aberdeen. They've showed great home form all season, and I'm sure, like Rangers wanted the game to go ahead, I've no doubt Tony Docherty and his men wanted the game to go ahead as well.
Exactly, which we often forget. So anyway, let's pause and thank Craig for his call for the first time. He's been in touch. Hopefully it won't be the last. We'll hopefully speak to Craig soon, whilst I tell you about this. Clyde One. Yes, last time out on Make Me a Winner, it was Megan who got the phone call and won £171,000. Just donate it to a new pitch.
You're a Dundee fan.
Yeah, but that would probably only cover the 6-yard box, actually. Pitches are expensive. But anyway, she's going to treat her parents, go on holiday, treat herself to some fancy makeup, apparently. Must be able to buy some amount of fancy makeup with that. Anyway, we could make you the winner of £172,000 only if you're in the draw. Text yes to 61025. Texts are £2 plus your standard network rate. Enter at Clyde1.com for £2 or call 0330 880 4523. Calls charged at a standard rate. Over 18s only. All the rules for this network competition are online. And if you get the call after three tomorrow, answer within five rings and say, make me a winner to win £172,000.
0141 951 1025. This is Scottish football's league leader, Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Andy Halliday and Roger Hannah are here. If you've got any like thoughts about your team's result and performance at the weekend and the way the league table's sitting and that sort of stuff, we don't even really consider ourselves experts on that, but I think we're much more comfortable than some of the discussions I'm asking you to have, because Matthew's tweeted to say if we could get hammed and drained in an hour against Georgia in the midst of biblical monsoons, an extra hour would have sorted dens where it wasn't even raining anymore.
Now, if I had a call in the Georgia game, we had to win the toss and kick off towards the shallow end. You remember Callum McGregor's opening goal?
But yeah, but this is the problem with sort of trying to compare two completely different scenarios. With no offence to Dens Park, and I know the Hampden pitch is much maligned, I'm still going to guess that the drainage at Hampden is better than the drainage...
You don't have to guess. I'll nail that one for you, Gordon.
And the playing surface prior to the rain at Hampden would be better than the playing surface prior to the rain at Dens.
So, I always like to think over the weekend, I always think to myself, I wonder what's going to be the main debate and talking point on a Monday. I did not expect Dens Park's pitch to be the main subject so far.
And then also, that's before you get into international football, European football. That is a real headache to reschedule a game. You're talking about teams flying to different countries and going back to that. So that's when the pressure is properly on you. Yeah. I know we'll have a big debate, but let's be honest. The SPFL will stick this game in a free midweek. We'll see that as being dramatic, but it's not really in the grand scheme of things, is it?
No. I mean, if this was a... I'm trying to use an example that upset anyone, but if this is Dundee versus St Mirren that's getting rescheduled, I don't think it can be any more dramatic
than the first Dundee Rangers game of the season, which had to be delayed because there was a traffic incident. The Rangers team bus couldn't get to Dens Park, and if you remember, it was so dramatic Sam Lammers scored a goal.
That's true. He scored yesterday.
They're scoring again yesterday.
I have to say, if you're looking for like a caller that ticks a few boxes here, we've got Jim on. He's a former groundsman and his surname's Halliday. I mean, you've got to welcome this guy.
I like it, Jim Halliday. Welcome.
Fantastic. No relation, Jim.
Hello?
No relation to Andy?
Aye. Well, I don't know him, actually, but I spoke to him at Beachwood the last time when he was down here with the Hearts, actually, after the game, so I did.
He was groundsman on my...
He's got relations up that way, so he has where Andy belongs to.
He was groundsman on my hairdo before transplant last year.
Do you remember that, though, Auchinleck, when you played...
I do remember it, yep. Yeah. Was it 3-0, 4-0?
Oh, I don't remind him of that.
I think it was 5.
Was it 5? There you go, Jim. Thank you for reminding me.
Did you score that day, my man?
Probably.
It was like 2 years ago. I cannot remember.
I'll play a score.
Anyway, Jim, give us the groundsman's insight into this stuff.
Well, I was a groundsman down at Beachwood maybe about 10, 12 years ago.
Jim, the surface was a bowling green that day, by the way.
Well, there you go. That's my full thing about this, boys. If Auchinleck Talbot, a non-league club, can have a surface like, why is the Premier League club in the biggest state it's in? That's the thing, boys. It's absolutely shambolic, isn't it?
I see a lot of that, Roger, and wouldn't dream of disagreeing with it entirely, because there has to be the bones of a good point there. At the same time, I'm still just a touch reluctant, because if a stadium has... whatever's underneath Dens Park, maybe it's a problem that's built up over a number of years. Maybe Auchinleck is a drier place than Dundee or whatever. Do you know what I mean? Depending on where the ground is and all that sort of stuff. I think there's definitely a good point that Jim makes in there. It's just maybe not 100% as simple as that sometimes.
No, listen, there can be lots of different factors, comparison. But I was talking there.
Like Brendan Rodgers has spoken, I don't think he's delighted about Celtic Park this season.
No, and I was at Fir Hill the other week for Super Scoreboard. I didn't think it was looking great. You've spoken about the Motherwell surface this season. There are a few, it's the time of year where a few playing surfaces are looking tired. But there's a difference between tired and unable to be played on. And that's what the Dundee problem was yesterday. It's not in isolation. They have got issues there.
Yeah.
There's now an SPFL investigation. They're going to have to address those issues because I don't think any top flight side can have an ongoing situation when so many games are called off.
If we're talking about realistic solutions here, because more people are interested in punishment than solution in Scottish football, I think that's a theme. And we've had a couple of callers on saying Rangers should get the points. I can see at least another dozen calls that haven't made it on air to say Rangers should get the points. In a more calm, solution driven approach to this, is there any way that, because let's be honest, our clubs are skint. So
yeah,
Dundee probably can't
because,
afford to go,
because they're paying so much to VAR,
spend £1 million on a new pitch, £1.5 million. I don't know what these deso
pitches
cost. Particularly
not when they're looking to move to a new stadium.
So is there a case to say that maybe there is that, maybe, you know, from some sort of central fund or whatever, that clubs get money to maintain pitches? I don't think
there is a central fund now, and that was basically down to the fact that when the SPFL was created a few years ago from the SPL, there was a decision taken by the clubs not to have a central fund. They wanted any monies at the end of the year distributed around the 42 clubs. There was an option there by the executive to keep a fund for issues like you're talking about, Gordon, for a rainy day, so to speak. And the clubs didn't want to do that. So no, there is no fund there to help clubs out in situations like this.
I'm talking about potentially introducing that or whatever. But I love this from Annie's Land, who's tweeted, "I did say we were straying into territory." And I'm now going to take his word as gospel here. He says, "I've had the displeasure, of staying in Dundee. It's well known as the driest city in Scotland."
Oh, I'm not sure.
There you go.
Not sure.
So, I don't know. I was just trying to make the point that depending on where, there must be something going on, because one end of the street's fine and the other end isn't. And
the driest.
Don't know, but Jim's just gave me a flashback. I remember when Darvel were playing Aberdeen in the lead up to their cup final, and they released a picture of their pitch, and it was a bowling dean, and we had a game that weekend, big game.
Yeah.
And it was and the surface became really under question.
Well,
can you remember what the game was?
Clearly, Ayrshire is the place to be then.
Yeah, exactly.
So the producer tells me,
is that the driest place in Scotland, Ayrshire?
Well, maybe.
Could mean a few different things. The producer tells me Dundee was named Scotland's driest city in 2018. Have we given out that award recently? Is that an annual thing? Who's the current holder?
Because
You'd have to imagine it stays pretty much the same from year to year.
I don't think it would be St Andrews at the weekend.
Enough. That's plenty. Right. Thank you very much to Jim Halliday, the groundsman, which takes us up to this.
Beat the Pundit with the Scottish Sun. For the best football news and opinion online, thescottishsun.co.uk/football.
Right, come on, let's all club together. Let's make a conscious effort that in the second hour of tonight's show, we try and maybe talk about games that did take place at the weekend. And that's not to do a disservice to what you obviously feel is an important story, because we've given it a good old go. Hopefully you agree. What about you, Celtic fans? What did you take away from the game at the weekend? Any thoughts on Crawford Allen leaving his post at the Scottish FA? Any suggestions about who should replace him? You can suggest a Clyde One Super Scoreboard pundit if you so wish. But anyway, before that, it's Beat the Pundit time. Get your calls in before 7 o'clock and you could be playing next.
Tackle the headlines. 0141 951 1025. Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Andy Halliday and Roger Hanna are here on 0141 951 1025, or you can tweet us at ClydeSSB. Get in touch, let us know what's on your mind tonight. I think we've given postponement gate a real good kicking in the first hour of the show. If you want to keep going, that is what we're here for after all. But maybe I would gently suggest we could talk about some of the games that did take place over the weekend, or today's breaking news about Crawford Allen. Maybe you want to put yourself forward as the new head of refereeing operations in Scottish football. Anything else that's out there, good time to call, and we'll play this first.
Beat the Pundit with the Scottish Sun. For the best football news and opinion online, thescottishsun.co.uk/football.
Okay, Beat the Pundit time. Now, I will never, ever let it be said that these pundits don't take this competition seriously and they don't care passionately about the record on the competition, because as far as I was concerned, Andy Halliday had a 100% record. I thought he's won every week. But one of the producers in particular had it a real bee in his bonnet about it, and he said no, there was a night where the questions, there was a mistake on the questions, but we went to a tiebreaker and Andy lost the tiebreaker. News of this reached Mr. Halliday, who made me sit in the office before we came on air, watched the full thing back whilst he kept a tally of his answers versus the contestants' answers.
I'll tell you his name.
Evan. To prove once and for all that you did indeed win and you've got 100% record. Are you happy with that now?
I'm absolutely delighted.
Are you describing this as a VAR intervention?
Yep, and VAR got it right. I was actually trying to fight your corner with Christopher and Ayrshire as well.
No, never. John.
There is no corner to be fought.
John and Johnson, how are
I've
you, John?
3 points.
Hi there, guys. How are you all doing?
Hey, John. How good would it be, John, if after all of this, you came and ended Andy Halliday's unbeaten run?
There is zero chance of me beating either of them. I was actually just phoning up to make a point and they were scrambling for somebody gone.
Well, do you know what? Do you know all that means? That means somebody's not pulling their weight, because we're about to offend. I can see about 50 people who called in. 30 people, I would say, for Beat the Pundit.
Back yourself, John.
Back yourself, John.
I'm a golfer, but I like football and I love the show, so carry on.
Just play it. Why not? I don't mind that at all. Right, okay, let's get ready. We'll toss the coin. If it is heads, it will be Andy Halliday. If it's tails, it will be Roger Hannah. If Andy was phoning for Beat the Pundit, you could now just come on and make a point in a sort of reverse order. Yeah. I don't really know what's happened.
Make it about Fir Park on Saturday.
The good thing is, it is heads, so it's you, after all your grandstanding about your 100% record. So, let's give Andy some greatest hits radio to listen to, and we'll get your clock ready. John, you've got 30 seconds. Answer as many as you can, and pass if you don't know the answer, okay?
Yep.
Right, your 30 seconds starts now. Which Celtic player leads the table for assists in the Scottish Premiership?
O'Reilly.
Ridvan Yilmaz signed for Rangers from which club?
Pass.
What SPFL game was the only one to remain goalless at the weekend?
Habs.
The Prestwick Pirlo is the nickname of which Kilmarnock player?
Pass.
Name any two of the current Premiership sides that Tony Watts played for.
Motherwell.
And one more quick.
No.
Come on, another team in the Premiership. You know the one.
Simon.
Right, okay. It's not the one I thought you'd go for. But anyway, let's bring Andy Halliday back.
That was the longest 30 seconds
ever. Oh, would you listen to this? You sound like Gordon DL. A sound that no one...
It's because I didn't like that song and I know
you're kidding me on. It was great Starship.
No.
Oh, that's an 80s classic, Andrew.
What's wrong with that? I thought it was quite... That's not right song, no?
I was desperate for it to be done.
Okay. 30 seconds, Andy Halliday. Same questions. Time starts now. Which Celtic player leads the table for assists in the Scottish Premiership? Ridvan Yilmaz signed for Rangers from which club?
Besiktas.
What SPFL game was the only one to remain goalless at the weekend?
Queen's Park Ref.
The Prestwick Pirlo is the nickname of which Kilmarnock player?
Watson.
Name any two of the current Scottish Premiership sides that Tony Watt has played for.
Motherwell and Celtic.
Who was the last Norwegian to play for Celtic?
Ayer.
Which team became the first to be relegated in Scotland at the weekend?
Edinburgh City.
John, did you forecast it? Did you predict it?
I absolutely, but as I say, I just wanted to make a point. You were right.
The great thing is, we can do that anyway. We can just do that in a second. Andy Halliday, I think you sounded like you knew your stuff, but you've messed up on one, which will annoy you. But there we go.
He knows already.
Matt O'Reilly, you got that, John. You were off to a good start. The most assists in the Premiership. Yilmaz signed from Besiktas. Andy goes 2-1 up. Queen's Park Wraith was the goalless draw. 3-1 up. David Watson. The Prestwick Pirlo. It's a good nickname, that, isn't it? High praise.
Young player of the year.
4-1 Andy Halliday. Celtic, John, you remember Tony Watt played for Celtic?
I absolutely do, but I was under pressure.
You did it the hard way. But you got it right. St Mirren, Motherwell, St Johnstone, Hearts, and Celtic. So you weren't done, John. You were plugging away. And Andy Halliday showed some signs of weakness. The last Norwegian
Thiago
to play
Holm.
For Celtic, Thiago Holm, not Christopher Ayer. But you got back on the saddle with Edinburgh City, first team to be relegated in Scotland, Roger. Earliest ever, I think.
Is it really?
I think it's one. Yes, I'm sure I read that somewhere.
Many
the
points
weekend.
To get deducted.
But they got a deduction, didn't they?
Yeah, the points deduction, yeah.
So anyway, Edinburgh City.
And they go to Falkirk on Saturday, when Falkirk can come up.
If Hamilton
drop anything, yeah.
So there we are. Well, John, you had it down as a foregone conclusion before it started. It turned out to be that way. So let's just talk football. What did you make of your team's performance at the weekend?
Well, 3-0. I was actually working and I was listening to it, and I believe Hugh Keevans and others had said that there was a pressing, there was hard work it was becoming, but at the end of the day, 3-0, you can't ask any more than that. Yep. And Forrest getting a goal as well was brilliant.
Yeah, 3-1, let's not rob St Johnstone of their goal. I wouldn't. Hugh Keevans says every game's hard work if a team doesn't score within the first 30 seconds. But Roger, what should we take away from the Celtic game at the weekend?
Well, it was a lot less hard work than the St Johnstone visit to Celtic Park earlier in the season. They got the job done. They scored 3 goals. They had another 3 rolled out, I think, for offside. A very busy VAR room on Saturday afternoon. They are back at the top of the table. They will stay there for the duration of the international break. When they come back, I believe they've got Livingston, who look gone. Not quite at the speed of Edinburgh City, but I can't see them recovering in time to stay in the Premiership. So you would think Celtic would win that game of football, and then that would mean they would go to Ibrox on the 7th of April, top of the Premiership, unless of course the Rangers trip to Dundee is rescheduled prior to the Old Firm game.
Let's not start that again. Listen, it looked pretty comfortable to me. Celtic had plenty of chances, didn't look like conceding until Carter Vickers went off. And listen, there's been a lot of debate this season about Kyogo. He's been off form. Does he suit Roger's style of play? That looked a lot like the Kyogo of old to me.
Yeah, and it was 2 or 3 points as well. Nicholas Kuhn, again, looked as if he was beginning to find form. Matt O'Reilly, man with the most assists, looked as if he's coming back to a bit of form. The thing that will worry Celtic again is Carter Vickers. They need to try and get Carter Vickers to a stage where he can play 90 minutes every week, and it's looking as if it's problematic at the minute.
John, you mentioned James Forrest. Do you think he could play an important role between now and the end of the season?
I think he'll have to, actually, to be honest. And the proof's in the pudding. The guy's got so many accolades, and he will have to go to the well again for us when called on and produce the goods. Yeah, absolutely.
He really just got a strong dislike for St Johnstone. He scored more against St Johnstone than any other opponent in his career. It was his 20th appearance of the season, Roger, which is probably more than I thought, albeit some of them would have been a few minutes here and there. Third goal of the season. Celtic have got loads of wingers, although not as many as they had when they signed Nicholas Kuhn. Actually, it's now down at a much more manageable number, if you like. Brendan Rodgers made those comments about him being sort of arguably the best winger at the club. I think there were some caveats in there. And comes on and scores and looked pretty sharp at the weekend.
He did. And for me, he's been written off far too quickly. He's 32 years of age. People speak about him as if he's 42 years of age.
But Brendan Rodgers kind of fed into that though, didn't he? Talking about he's the best, but, you know, a certain age, the intensity, the legs, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, but I think he can still be involved. I think he's good enough that he can still be involved. Is that 15 consecutive seasons he's scored for Celtic? He's got more than 100 goals for the club. He's got more than 100 assists for the club. He is one of the most decorated footballers in the history of the club. And he has been written off too early for me. I think he can still contribute, Gordon.
Unlucky not to get a goal of the weekend award off of Mir Roger as well. Good finish.
Yep.
You've got to say he's always had decent numbers. He's always been a goal threat. No, you mentioned 20 appearances being a lot more than people expected. It's a lot less than I expected if the manager's calling you the best winger at the football club. But listen, his opportunities will be few and far between. It seems as if two of that front three for Celtic are almost nailed when it comes to these bigger games, and Maeda and Kyogo. I think the other one's sort of been rotated, whether it's been Kuhn or Yang or Forrest, and nobody's quite grasped it. And it'll be interesting to see who sort of nails that position over the next few weeks. But certainly Nicholas Kuhn's had an upturning performance the last 2 weeks.
Could that be important, John? Because he got a lot of stick when he first came in, didn't he, Nicholas Kuhn? Is he maybe starting to tick along now?
Well, obviously, we can see talent there, and he's been off with maybe a groin injury or something. I remember the game, listening to the game from his, and Matt Wilson actually said that why not put him on for the 90 and get match fit, get the minutes under his legs. But if he is carrying a slight injury, you can't obviously just keep going, especially if you're already up. So yeah, he looks like a good player, absolutely.
Oh, listen, without doubt, he does. And it's a delicate balancing act. I think, you know, Andy knows better than me. You know, when Andy signed for Motherwell, you hadn't played a lot of football for a period of time, and Stuart Kettlewell was trying to manage your minutes on the pitch. And then, you know, you pick up a little injury and that's a setback. That sometimes happens to footballers. It's not quite as simple as saying, you know, get him out there, flog him for 90 minutes and that will make him match fit. You do need to try and just balance things, balance the workload. And listen, we discussed it earlier on. That was actually one of the reasons I didn't think yesterday's postponement was a dreadful thing for Rangers, because it allowed them to rest up some players.
What about from Celtic? Because we get obsessed with the psychology of it all. Rangers still have a game to play. If they win it, they go top of the league. Is it of any boost at all or any benefit at all to Celtic, even psychologically, that they remain top for a bit? Is that the way it works? Or
I don't think
we overthink that stuff.
I think we probably overthink that, to be perfectly honest with you, Gordon.
Andy?
Won the games of football, it's a heady. I think that's all you can do. Celtic done it the weekend. Rangers never got the opportunity. I think a lot of positives that Celtic will take for the weekend is clean bill of health. No one get injured. I'm not sure about the Kuhn groin niggle. I think the big one for me was Kyogo's form in the game. I think, like I said, it looked like the Kyogo of old to me. You know, where do we see Kyogo at his best and when he's at his best? It's playing in that last line of defence, his movement in the box, chances created for him. I thought we've seen that in abundance. And he only scored one, got one assist. Looks like he could have had two or three.
Because there were a few ruled out, Roger, by offside.
Yeah.
Like, on one hand, if it's offside, it's offside. You know, that's what it's there for. But I wonder if Brendan Rodgers, I was listening to some of his comments, almost like, you know, taking heart because you're then a centimetre away here or there from a really convincing attacking performance, almost to underline the fact that they were getting into a lot of areas and creating a lot of those chances.
Yeah, and listen, Kyogo will just, you know, a couple disallowed, he'll just get up and gone and go again. You feel sorry for Alistair Johnson. He's not going to get too many like that, I wouldn't think, in his Celtic career. It was a terrific goal, and it was just, you know, a toe offside.
Was that a good example, by the way, that one of a sort of wider point about VAR and how frustrating it sometimes is for fans when you're in the dark a little bit and you don't really know? Because we were getting calls after the game saying, this is a disgrace. Like, Alistair Johnson is not offside here. But when you're in the stadium and it wasn't a live televised game, and I know some people have got magic tellies, then afterwards you realise, well, it was James Forrest, it was offside in the build-up. And then everybody goes, yeah, fair, you know, fair enough, okay.
Yeah,
it was.
And how do you communicate that? I know, we've discussed it all along. I think it's one of the... If you're listing the problems with VAR over the weekend, that would be a wee bit further down the list, I think. But I know the point you're making. Yeah, I agree with you.
Let's thank John again for his time and hear from Brendan Rodgers then on the performance of the game itself.
Yeah, very good. Very good. Really pleased. Three excellent goals. Players getting some minutes. Callum Carter-Vick is playing and coming back. And so really, really pleased for that. Overall, I thought from the start of the game there was a great feeling in the stadium with the crowd, and players started the game well, and I thought overall very good performance. Only downside was when I made all the changes, we just in our pressing, we went a little bit passive, and that gave them a little bit more time on the ball than what we would have wanted, but overall we scored three goals. Lots of VAR decisions today, but that's also a compliment to the team, because we had so many aggressive moments in the game, so there's lots of parts of the game to be looked at in that aspect, and so that's a good sign from myself. So we created a lot, and really pleased with the 3 points.
Let's bring in Paul, who's in Coatbridge. What have you got for us tonight, Paul?
I think at the weekend for Celtic, a lot of it was very much going through the motions. For a game that they should have won, but that's actually quite a good thing to see, because that's where we've been dropping points, when on games that we should have been just walking away with the 3 points, especially at home. You think back to like the one each against Kilmarnock. No disrespect to Kilmarnock or anything like that, but these are the games that with your coupon guarantees, you know, and that's what they've been dropping the points. That's the only reason why, to be quite honest, had Celtic went through the motions on these games in the past, that's why Rangers were anywhere near the top in first place in the league. So had Celtic just done the basic business. Bear in mind that Rangers have not beaten Celtic this season. And Celtic have only, and the league have only been beaten twice, you know. So it's the through the motions games that Celtic have not been completing. We're looking at VAR as well. A few points said earlier about VAR. I think if you take all the bias conversations out of and he supports this team, they support that team, etc., etc., was it any better than what we had? Is it just causing a new set of problems?
Oh, certainly. You know, is there anything in particular that the that you'd kind of mean from the weekend?
Well, the handball on the line is what people have been talking about. But just in general, is it giving us a better product? So, the standing about waiting after you've celebrated just isn't giving a good product for Scottish football. Look at if you look at it as a product as a whole, there's been a lot of chat. In fact, the first hour of your show was about a game that actually didn't take place. Yep. We knew that we knew at the start of the season how good a pitch Dundee had. So if you've got to meet a certain criteria, then they knew how good that pitch was start to finish. And therefore, if you've got to have minimum standards of stadiums and pitches, etc., for the overall product, then things like the pitches and VAR are not given a good enough product and taken away from the product. You can even boil it down to taking away from the product as a whole about away fans and limiting away fans and all that sort of thing for the Celtic Rangers games, taken away from the product overall. So people need to actually just take a wee step back from...
The only thing I would say, Paul, is you've just introduced three of the biggest talking points that we have ever on this show and rolled them into one.
Your money's worth it.
Trying to go through pitches, ticket allocations and VAR all in one go. Let's pick... Paul did reference one incident, and that's what we often talk about on a Monday night from the weekend. There was an alleged handball on the line from St Johnstone, Celtic on the attack. Anything in that one for you?
No, it was correct decision. It was no handball, no penalty.
Based on
his arm wasn't away from his body. It was tucked in. It looked as if it hit him almost on the T-shirt line, but his position, his hand and his body means no penalty.
I don't know the handball rule. No,
I don't blame you.
I have to say...
But to be fair, I do know what you mean, but just because there are really bad ones doesn't mean that we can't still try and know what we should know.
It wasn't one that particularly offended me. If it had been given, we're now sort of almost conditioned into saying, oh well, that's the rule. If it had been given, I don't think people would have been screaming the place down,
because that's part of the problem. We'll get to ones
Andy's
games.
Wasn't given, didn't particularly offend me.
Like, it's difficult, isn't it? Because I get why people want this notion of consistency. I'm still not sure what that looks like, but also because there have been really bad mistakes, mate, I wouldn't want those to become the barometer either. Do you see what I mean? And say, oh well, if that's given, that needs to be given. Yeah, but hold on a minute. Everybody's saying that was a terrible mistake.
Yeah.
So we still need to try, I think, and work our way through them individually.
You spoke there about the product. I mean, look at the end of was it West Ham Aston Villa yesterday, where they wait more than 5.5 minutes.
5 minutes and 37 seconds.
That is unacceptable. That is having a detrimental effect on the product. Something needs to be done about that. I saw somebody tweeting earlier on saying there should be some time limitation, put 2 minutes, and if the VAR can't make up their minds within 2 minutes, then clearly it's not a clear and obvious error.
Well, this reminds
therefore
me
you go with the on-pitch decision.
This kind of reminds me though of something that we discussed last week. Let me be really clear, we have to try everything we can to drive up standards. We absolutely have to.
Yeah, VAR's not going away.
And this maybe feeds into the conversation about Crawford Allen today. We have to drive up standards for sure. But I'm worried that we're kidding ourselves on that actually we just, our ref just need to get a bit better, or we just need to fine tune this, or you know, full time refs or extra cameras. And I keep saying it, you've just given an example of the biggest and richest league in the world, who've had VAR for 6 years, longer than us, and took 5.5 minutes. So this notion that we just need to tweak that or tweak that, and it all gets better. I think it's fantasy.
I'm now resigned to the reality that this is what it's going to look like going
that's
forward.
That's quite depressing.
Mm-hmm. Well, listen, Ian Maxwell at the start, when VAR came in October 2022, said he felt there would be, I don't know whether he said 4 months or 6 months or 3 months, of teething problems. And I think after that 3 or 4 or 6 months, whatever it was, Gordon, I think I foolishly expected things to be okay. And they're not okay, and they're not getting better. But you're right, they're not getting better in England. They're not getting better in Europe. Look at the John Souter handball against Benfica in Lisbon. The Conor Goldson handball against USG in Belgium a couple of years ago. It's not just in Scotland. This is what it's going to look like. And it was interesting, I read Ian Maxwell's comments when he was announcing the departure of Crawford Allen. And he basically said to clubs and to managers and to players and to officials, sorry, not club officials, that the blame culture needs to end. They need to stop this unacceptable hounding of officials, if you like. This isn't a season when Rangers complained about Willie Collum, Brendan Rodgers complained about John Beaton, etc. And he said, I think he referred to them as external stakeholders, that means the clubs, need to learn the rules better. That's fine, Ian, but you need to tell us what the rules are, and your officials at the SFA need to show that they know a consistent implementation of the rules.
Well, maybe that leads us on nicely to stories about Crawford Allen departing today. Well, departing at the end of the season, but the story comes out today. Andy Halliday, we've not really wound him up yet about the handball incidents at Fir Park. Maybe we could do that or anything else on the phones. Do call right now if you can, and we'll get you on next.
Taking your calls on Scottish football. 0141 951 1025. This is Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Roger Hannah and Andy Halliday are here. Two very serious quizzers, it has to be said. So I've got a treat for them in a second. But a quick reminder to get your calls in on any of the weekend's action. Or doesn't even need to be weekend's action. If you've been listening to the start of tonight's show, even postponed games will do it on the phone line. So 0141 951 1025. The only breaking story, really, or one of the breaking stories of today, is that the Scottish FA's head of refereeing operations, Crawford Allen, will leave his position at the end of the season. I wonder what you make of that on 01419511025. And whilst you get your calls in, let me do this.
The full-time teaser with Universal Interiors East Kilbride, offering champion bespoke media units to put you right in the game.
Right, thank you to Mark Rennie for sending this question in. And it's quite a good one, it has to be said. So I'm looking at the website he's taken it from. I think he's taken it from Transfer Market. So don't blame me, don't blame Mark. If you disagree with it, blame the website, okay? That's me. I'm now putting those caveats in every night.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just fed up of the stick, Roger Hannah. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna walk away from position as full-time teaser master at the end of the season. Anyway, since the turn of the century, can you name the 10 players who've made the most league appearances in Scotland? So I guess it would be top flight, actually, looking at this. So
Scott Brown.
Since the turn of the century, who are the 10 players with the most league appearances in Scotland? Scott Brown, yes. Top of the tree, well done.
You mentioned earlier, James Forrest.
Weirdly, no.
Wow.
Not league appearance. Well, no, because he'd only come into the Celtic team in what, 2000 and...
Yeah, but he's had 16 years.
Yeah. Certainly he's scored in the last 15 seasons, hasn't he? I'll go for Andy Considine.
Yes, yeah, Andy Considine. Well, and he's second. You're doing them in order.
And surely Lewis Stevenson.
Again, not according to this, which makes me a bit suspect, I have to say, but no. Because there would be a couple in there, again, you would think...
Paul Hanlon?
No.
Wow. They know both just 500 odd games for that.
Yeah, he has to be on this list, actually, doesn't he?
I think Steve, am I right in saying Stevenson's made 500?
Yeah, no, you're right, because he's actually made... Yeah, he's on the list. I'll just scrub off the bottom couple and add Lewis Stevenson to this. Anyway, right, let's bring in Ian. Oh, he's a Motherwell fan in Wishaw. How's it going, Ian?
Sales.
Not bad, not bad. What have you got in your mind?
Just a couple of points for the game of the weekend. I've gone into handballs in 2 seconds, but first of all, I thought Kerwell's team selection at the weekend let us down.
almost felt as if we undermined Aberdeen. They're obviously a wounded animal, going through a tough spell. I felt when he dropped Drakovsky in the midfield and went with Miller, Holden, with Nicholson and Spittle, we pretty much conceded the first half because of that.
And well, see, I thought we were going to phone in and say he should have started Halliday, but he should have started the other midfielder. You were right to stay on the bench, but it was your pal that should have played. Difficult for you to comment exactly on who should or shouldn't have played, obviously. What was your take on the game, though?
Yeah, I don't think we started the game well. Aberdeen had a foothold of the game, had a couple of early chances, obviously get the goal, and you always feel in any type of games that the first goal is going to be really important. Feel as if we respond though and score a perfectly good goal that ends up getting ruled out. So the second half becomes a different team talk at half time, different approach in the second half. I thought we gained a lot more control in the second half, but certainly not creating as much as we would have liked. Take pride in the fact that we scored the third most goals in the league this year. But yeah, a lot of that's down to the chances we create and the quality of chances we create, and I don't think we did that the weekend.
Yeah. And I saw quotes, I think, for Stuart Kettlewell today, maybe to the club media, saying that it hadn't really gone, the players hadn't really followed what the game plan was, and it just was one of those days where it just didn't really work out at all. I fancied Motherwell strongly, I have to say. You know, you've seen Aberdeen losing at Dens in midweek. Motherwell just won at Ibrox. Remember that? You know, I was going for a home win in that game. I was quite surprised when the news came through that Leighton Clarkson had scored that goal. And Motherwell just never really quite got going. I wouldn't panic yet. I don't think it's time to be looking over shoulders or anything like that, despite obviously Aberdeen winning and Ross County winning. But I think Stuart Kettle will probably feel a wee bit better if he can get a couple more wins.
What do you think, Ian?
With that, I just felt like, I think sometimes a game like that, you need to earn your right to like go and attack. So if you kind of dig in for the first 20 minutes, which I don't think we'd done. I thought we'd kind of, we let Aberdeen do that, and then obviously you're playing catch-up. We're obviously not helped by the fact that they're officiating at the weekend's incompetent at best, but there's nothing we can do about that, I guess. We do score a perfectly good goal. I think the fact it takes Willie Colm over a minute to decide that it's a handball shows you it's not a clear and obvious error. And then how he doesn't see Shinny hand on it or with his elbow in the last kick of the game is incredible. But, you know, we have to get used to that. Mm-hmm. We discuss it every weekend. The referees are not up to standards. So I just felt like we went into the game almost kind of like, oh, we'll beat these. And I just felt like we needed to kind of work hard for the first 20, 25 minutes and then push on and see if we could go and, you know, assert ourselves in the game attacking-wise.
I mean, I guess to be accurate, as much as I'd love to just keep stirring up on this occasion, I suppose it doesn't need to be a clear and obvious error as such for Theo Bairns, because it's, you know, goals are checked, aren't they, for any sort of infringement in the lead up to it. However, that's maybe by the by. Do the balanced one first, because Andy Halliday's just going to go all pro Motherwell on us. What did you make of the disallowed goal for Theo Bairns' handball?
You know the rules, and There was actually about three of them in England at the weekend as well. So I understand why Willie Colm and Stephen McLean have decided to disallow the goal, but I disagree with the decision. It's high up in his arm. You could make an argument it's maybe at the sort of T-shirt line. It doesn't really affect the flight of the ball. You know, it's not like the West Ham one where Thomas Souček actually diverts the ball towards Jared Bowen with his arm. The ball was going in that direction anyway.
I wonder if any of that matters, to be fair.
Oh well, Gordon, mm-hmm. You've probably hit the nail on the head. It probably doesn't matter. Technically, Willie Colm and Stephen McLean would probably be able to mount an argument for why they have disallowed it, and we probably wouldn't be able to argue with them when you look at the rule.
Believe me, Andy Halliday will argue with you.
But
go on.
You know,
argue with the man. Tell him he's wrong.
Oh well, of course I believe he's wrong. No, I listened to the show on Saturday as well after the game, and I heard you talk about the briefing that us as players also had at the start of the season, and was led to believe that if you're competing in the air for a ball and it hits your arm in that respect, you shouldn't be penalised for it. I think that kind of falls under that remit. But the biggest one for me was I've still yet to see an angle where it actually shows impacting Theo Bairns below his T-shirt line.
Like, so, definitely to prove
definitely.
It.
Definitely. Right. And I've seen the same angles that Wally Collum and VAR have looked at. I still can't see a picture that categorically shows you that. So for me, very, very difficult to stomach it. And of course, every club up and down the country are disappointed with certain decisions. You've got to live with it. It's interesting because I'm trying to take the bias away. And if I'm Graeme Shinney, I'd be disappointed if a penalty was given against me. Very close proximity. It bounces up. You could argue his arm is away from his body, but I would be disappointed. But the issue I have is I've no doubt that I'll watch the same instant or similar that you can compare and a penalty will be given. We've talked about it plenty of times. I think specifically with that handball rule, I just think we're seeing far too many inconsistencies when it comes to decisions.
And again, Roger, maybe I'll back to sort of communication, clarity, consistency, all these frustrating buzzwords, because you're right. We have I can see why we've become conditioned, and you say, well, Theo Bear's arm is out, and if it hits his arm, then, you know, the goal's ruled out. What's the big drama? But to go back to what Andy said, and I've been at referees' briefings, there was a sort of a guidance out there earlier in the season that if you're in a congested penalty box and your arms are out and that, you know, you're going up for headers and so on, then that maybe wouldn't be penalised as a handball. So how does that does that stack up?
I'll take you to, I heard Michael Antonio's interview in Match of the Day 2 last night after West Ham. West Ham had two goals disallowed because of handballs. Antonio himself had one disallowed. The ball he was the goal scorer, and the ball hit his hand. The other one, the guy who scored the goal, it wasn't the guy whose hand it hit. And Michael Antonio was making the point that the guidance they had been given at the start of the season was, if the goal scorer is the guilty party, then it's no goal. But if the ball glances off somebody else's, i.e. Theo Bear's arm, and Lennon Miller scores
but
the goal...
But again, to then correct you, because this is what...
No, you're not correcting me. It's like Transfer Market. You're correcting Michael Antonio.
But to be, and I'll have to do it to Andy's boss as well, but I'm sure it's done in good faith. And this is the point I'm on about the communication and what message gets to who and who puts it out there. Because if it's a handball offence by Theo Bear and that, regard, it doesn't matter if he's not the goal scorer. What they talk about, and because Stuart Kettlewell said that after the game, he came out and said, I'm paraphrasing, can't believe this, because at Ross County, we played Ross County earlier in the season.
Yeah, you should have showed that again at the weekend.
The problem with that is the reason that wasn't given as a hand, but was it Victor Latourie?
Victor Latourie, it was, yeah.
Because he kicked it onto his own hand. So I don't know.
So where does that leave us with John Souter and Benfica?
Again, ridiculous, but then. We can't use every mistake as a justification to make more mistakes.
Just to clarify,
because I got a bit confusing there. If they think Theo Bear committed a handball offence, now there's a debate in there.
Yeah.
But if they think Theo Bear committed a handball offence, it doesn't matter that it wasn't him that scored the goal, right? Where that distinction comes in is if you score a goal and it hits your hand at all, then yeah, the goal's ruled out, and that tolerance bit doesn't apply if it's the assister.
But part of the point I was making was Michael Antonio clearly isn't getting the communication that he needs.
And again,
Stuart Kettlewell clearly isn't getting the communication he needs.
I mentioned it was
about
communication.
So when Ian Maxwell is telling clubs, well, listen, you need to brush up on the laws of the game, I think it's imperative that the SFA and the FA down south get their communication and get the message across, because the message isn't getting across, you know, properly to players and to managers. And it looks to me at times, actually, the message isn't getting across to match officials consistently enough.
I think that's clearly a part of it. And then before you even get to that, once you get beyond that, maybe there are people who then pick and choose when they throw certain bits of information in to make their own point as well, and it makes it a big minefield.
When's the next round? When the panel looks over the quarter of VAR,
a few weeks away, I'd imagine.
I'm looking forward to you two continuing the debate for last week, going on for the two decisions wrong to the 13. What is the next quarter going to be?
But what happens if the independent review panel, and listen, it's subjective, if they come out and say
Theo Bears was correct,
Theo
decision.
Bears, no, if they come out and say that was a wrong decision.
Nothing.
So be it. Thanks to Ian for getting us going on that on 01419511025. Right, I have to apologise, or not apologise, I'm probably letting people down here, to Kieran and Dean and Aaron and others who think I just announced my resignation from Clyde One Super Scoreboard when I said I'm stepping away from the full time teaser master at the end of the season if I get any more abuse. I know you're all.
Are you going to the SFA for this ref's job?
I know you're all probably desperate for that to be some sort of resignation announcement. It wasn't. It was just a joke about the teaser. I'm sorry. And we should maybe we shouldn't doubt Mark Rennie. How many seasons did Lewis Stevenson spend in the Championship? Didn't think about that, you two, did you?
So was Lewis Stevenson not in the list?
No, because it was quite a number of appearances in the Championship.
But you checked it and said it was?
No, because I was just looking at his league appearances.
Yeah, okay.
Right, which didn't account for three seasons in the Championship. There you go.
Apologies to Mark Rennie then. What about Liam Craig?
Yes.
Beat me to it. What about Craig Gordon?
Nope.
What, has Callum McGregor made it yet?
No.
Must be some appearances.
What about James Fowler?
Yes, and we'll get the rest of those answers next. Number one for football in Glasgow and the West. 0141 951 1025. Clyde One Super Scoreboard. Into the final part of tonight's Clyde One Super Scoreboard. It's been a quick old show, has to be said. Still technically time for you to squeeze some calls in on the usual number if you fancy, or tweet us at Clyde SSB. We've been going over this full-time teaser from Mark tonight, who says, since the turn of the century, can you name the 10 players with the most top flight league appearances in Scotland? So you've got Scott Brown, Andy Considine, Liam Craig and James Fowler.
I'll go Chris Iffa from Ayrshire.
Yes, Chris Boyd is on there, well done. Okay.
Go get the Motherwell one in there, Keith Lasley.
Yes, of course, and one for the St Mirren fans as well now.
What about 10 years on for the League Cup win, Russell Anderson?
No.
No.
Alan McGregor?
No.
Played an awful lot of games for St Mirren, but I don't know how many were on top, like Hugh Murray.
Mm-mm. Nope, afraid not. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 to go, sorry. Is there?
Five to go, because we didn't.
Four. Oh, no, Stevenson was wrong.
Stevenson was wrong, wasn't it?
You're right, aye. Five to go, should we? That makes away. No, it's not.
What about Stephen Craigan?
Nope. But.
Hamill.
Yeah, Stevie Hamill. Of course. Come on. I seriously think you've only got three, unless I've crossed out something that you gave me during a break or something.
Well, I've got six ticked, seven ticked now, and one of them was Stevenson, which you said I've turned it to be wrong.
Brown.
Yep.
Considine.
Yep.
Hamill.
Yes.
Boyd. Yep. Lasley.
Oh, you're right enough.
Craig.
I hadn't written down Lasley.
And Fowler. Come on.
Oh, Fowler.
Keep up.
I didn't have Fowler.
We're talking about counting to seven here. I know I get a lot wrong on this show, but if you wouldn't mind. Anyway, right, what else is doing the rounds? There actually was a sort of breaking one. I'm not going to lie and pretend to you that it's huge news that you're going to want to have an extended show, but Celtic getting an early, Roger announcing a game against Chelsea during a 2024 USA tour, they've announced tonight. So the University of Notre Dame will welcome both Celtic and Chelsea to Indiana this summer as they go head to head on July the 27th.
So well, before Gabriel or Andrew are on the phone, I would just like to tell the bosses that Clyde wins Super Score, but I am available to cover any American based tours this summer. Listen, it's an exciting fixture. Anytime you see, you know, Celtic or Rangers up against the elite of the English Premier League, there's a bit of glamour about it. We always prefer it. It's in European competition. But if it happens to be in Indiana in the middle of July, I'll happily go.
What was the one you went to in SpongeBob SquarePants was in the pitch?
It was in Florida. We played Corinthians was one.
And why another was, Brazilian why based was SpongeBob there again?
Sao Paulo maybe? I've no idea.
It definitely was though. I've made that up for some sort of...
I'm sure we won that tournament.
No, I think
it's
you
the
did.
Only thing we won.
You could have done with SpongeBob at Danger for me, dry the place up a bit.
That was some trip though, tell you. Training in the morning, Universal afternoon. Brilliant.
We in the theme parks, were
you? Different class. It's right up my street, that.
I'm quite a theme park goer, I have to say.
Love it.
Roger Hanna?
I have been, yes. I do quite like all that.
Yeah, I'm well into that sort of stuff.
You go and see Shamu?
I didn't know. You'd have got the old gigs.
Soaked.
Aye. Soaked wet gigs, watching Shamu.
So anyway, there we go. We've gone really off topic tonight. But yeah, Celtic going to play Chelsea in the US of A in the summer. Just in case anyone wants to, I don't know, plan their holidays around it, or we'll send Hugh Keevans out to cover it or something. But there you go. That was about all we had in terms of additional news that broke tonight. We did get very distracted with Dens Parks pitch, let's at least dedicate a good few minutes to what has to be one of the games of the season.
Yeah.
You were there. Come on, take us through it.
It was absolutely bonkers. For a start, 2,500 St Mirren fans down the M77, fourth against fifth, a battle at the start of the run-in for what's likely to be a European place next season. One that Kilmarnock haven't had for a good few years. They don't like to remember Connors Key Nomads. One that St Mirren haven't had since 1987 when they won the Scottish Cup and get into the old Cup Winners' Cup. Huge game, St Mirren, fantastic start. Charles Dunn, Michael Mandron, two up at half-time, coasting. Could have been three early in the second half, and Mandron had another chance. And from 61 to 79 minutes, Kilmarnock exploded with five goals. They leapfrogged St Mirren into fourth. The momentum is with them.
Like, no way whatsoever you could see that coming. Is that, I mean, that's a daft question, I guess.
Listen, Killy were better at the start of the second half, but it couldn't have been any worse. They were so off the pace in the first half. But, you know, they hadn't really hinted at any of this. But from the moment Kyle Vassell poked that one home for 2-1, the whole mood in the place changed. They get a penalty almost straight away. Ryan Flynn, a rather injudicious challenge, and Marley Watkins. Danny Armstrong scored the penalty, and St Mirren just collapsed. I mean, Stephen Robinson said after the game he was shell-shocked. He looked it. He said it was unacceptable. He's right. He said the defending was naive. He's correct. And St Mirren now have 2 weeks to ponder on this.
Ponder and then play who?
They don't play Motherwell next,
Motherwell at Firth Park.
I actually didn't realise that.
Yeah, it did. I mean,
it'll be a good game.
It was a crazy game to watch. It really was. And a few Keasons is listening. He's going to notice me saying that dreaded word that hits XG. And I noticed a 2.5 XG within the game, and Rodgers was treated to seven goals. But listen, it was crazy.
He's a modern man, Roger. What can we say?
Although I was thinking about it the other night because I heard a great stat that did make me chuckle. Aberdeen were so bad at Dens last Wednesday night, their XG at half time was 0.09.
Which was the lowest. Must be a long throw, a long throw into the box to get 0.09. But listen, crazy. I mean, Kilmarnock in that spell, every time they they went forward, they looked like scoring, and every time they went forward, they did score. And Roger was quite right to point out, if that, you know, Mandron chance at the start of the second half, if that goes in, we're probably talking about a very, very different game. But, you know, it's funny because, you know, we rewind 2 months ago and Kilmarnock made the signing of Greg Stewart and the signing of Kevin Van Veen. You think that's probably what's going to be the defining difference to tip them over it. They've not started the game, either of them. So it just shows the prowess they've got and the options they've got.
You
in the
throw Gary Mackay Stephen into that as well.
How could I forget my big mate? But he was before January.
Big, we're going big mate.
Mate.
Even I can sort of ask those questions. Right, I think we'll leave it there. Maybe you Kilmarnock and St Mirren fans, I'd love to hear from you at some point. Maybe we could do it tomorrow. We should. I was going to say we'll be over the postponement at Dens, but I can make no such promises knowing the way we work. But maybe tomorrow we could look back on it in a bit more detail. Right, since the turn of the century, who are the 10 players with the most top flight league appearances in Scotland? Scott Brown, Andy Considine, Stevie Hamill, Chris Boyd, Keith Lasley, Liam Craig, James Fowler. Three to get.
What about Dave Mackay?
No.
I can't take credit for this one because a message for a fellow pundit's just flashed up in my phone.
Kenny Miller,
and I think it's a good shout. David Witherspoon.
Yes, David Witherspoon.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
That is a good one.
Hugh Keevans has messaged, but only to ask if he can wear his khaki shorts at Celtic v Chelsea, apparently. The thought.
I've never
seen his legs. Never. I've also never seen his forearms. I think there was one day he wore a t-shirt, but other than that, I've never seen his forearms. Anyway, two more.
It's not in my bucket list, one I have to say.
One is really tough. I mean, I had to double check, and I get it. I mean, it makes sense.
Johnny Hayes? No.
Played for Motherwell, Aberdeen, Dundee United.
Oh, do.
Cove Rangers, but not obviously in the top flight.
Mark Reynolds.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. And the last one played for St Johnston and Ross County and Partick Thistle, Aberdeen, Rangers, man of many clubs.
Richard Foster. Goodness me.
Okay, we'll leave it there. Thank you, Andy Halliday. Thank you, Roger Hanna. Thanks to all the weathermen, ground staff, and associated others who contributed to the debates about waterlogged pitches. And when we eventually made it onto the football, thanks for those as well. We will be back tomorrow. I actually won't be, now that I think about it. Andrew McLean will look after you alongside Simon Donnelly, and you'll find out, I'm sure you've all been desperate to know, how the big birthday weekend in St Andrews went for Gordon DL. So he'll be there at 6 tomorrow, and Callum is up next.